Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
And a good Thursday to you. Hello there. How's it going? Heath Klein in for Chuck today. King will be back in the fold tomorrow, but he is off at Harris Cherokee today, and so you will be hearing from him, talking the usual CFB tomorrow. He's there because, of course, today, first day of the NCAA basketball tournament, and so he needs to be up there, and so we needed me to fill in today while he does his afternoon show for 680 The Fan in Atlanta from up there. So I've got you, and even though it's the first day of the NCAA tournament for real, we had the two games a night the last two nights, but those don't really count in the first four. Even though today is the first day of the tournament, we'll be focused on college football because that is what we do here at the Chuck Oliver Show. But it did get me thinking about something that maybe comes on the radar this year for us in college football that has never been there before. And that is at least the slight prospect of a Cinderella team winning a game or two in the tournament. Because think about it. Before this, it was impossible. If you were going to go back and you were going to say in college football, what was a quote-unquote Cinderella win? What would we go with? If you wanted to go before we had the playoff in any form, in fact, before we even had Alliance, Bowl Coalition, any of it, you could argue for the BYU championship team. BYU won a national title. The game that they played to win the national title was against Michigan. They stayed undefeated by beating Michigan, but that game was on the MISLU network. Remember this? If you're somebody who was around in the 80s, it wasn't like it is now, where all the bowl games basically are either on ESPN or the occasional stray game that turns up on CBS. Yeah, the Sun Bowl is on CBS every year. But basically, 95% of the bowls are on ESPN, and they're all broadcast to a full national audience. Didn't used to be that way. Used to be these bowls would have their own little independent TV package, and they might turn up on the same channel that had the Welcome Back Cotter rerun before them and Barney Miller coming up later on. That was the kind of place that they would be. And that game was played well before New Year's Day. But BYU won, and they stayed undefeated, and as the only undefeated team, they wound up winning the national title. That's the closest thing in my lifetime that I could say to a true Cinderella national champ. And if we're talking about Cinderella since then, would you say Boise State when they beat Oklahoma that time? 2006 season? Everybody remembers the win because of how they did it with, you know, you did a hook and lateral, you did a Statue of Liberty to win the game, and then a young player proposes to his girlfriend right there on the sidelines, the whole bit. So that was kind of a cool Cinderella unexpected moment for Boise State's program to kind of break out on the national level. But it wasn't for a championship. It was just a nice bowl win. The sport, just the nature of the sport, having only two teams or then four teams play for the championship, it wasn't possible. Even if Cincinnati had been able to beat Alabama and make it to the championship round, does anybody think they could have won? We saw that movie play out with TCU a couple years ago. The answer was no. It was pretty much impossible, even if you could pull one upset, to pull two. And we still, I think, are in a situation where it's going to be really hard for that to happen. But what it does feel like is because there are more games, because the scenery will be more exciting, it feels like there could be a possibility of somebody for the first time feeling a little bit like a Cinderella. Now, does that mean that I think we're going to have somebody make it to a championship game from the 9 through 12 seeds? Probably not. The only scenario I could imagine where that happens would be if somebody wound up in the 9 through 12 seeds because maybe they had key injuries, lost a game or two that they shouldn't have lost because of injuries, or some player emerged as the year went on. And that happens sometimes. You know, you make a quarterback change and the team just becomes a different level of team or something. So it's possible somebody from the 9 through 12s could have something like that happen. But even if they do, it feels like the odds are better that it'll be, oh, it's Penn State or it's Ole Miss or it's Oklahoma, who's a 10 seed but had the talent the whole time to be better than that. It doesn't feel likely that you're going to see somebody win enough games to get through to the championship round. But what will it be like that first time that you have that 12 seed from, we'll say, the Mountain West or the Sun Belt or whoever? That 12 seed that everybody kind of gives the pat on the head. You're here because you're entitled to be here, but nobody thinks that you're going to be able to go into Athens or Tuscaloosa or South Bend or wherever and beat the big bad team. You're getting the pat on the head. You get to participate, and then that team moves on, and we'll get to the real stuff. The first time that happens, the fact that it will happen, and it will eventually, as long as we keep this format, one of them will spring an upset. But the fact that it will happen not in some antiseptic NFL stadium, that it's going to happen in Athens or Tuscaloosa or South Bend, that to me is what's going to make it have a true Cinderella feel to it when it does happen. It's just something we've never had the capacity for before in this sport. And it is what makes the tournament great. Somebody's going to win today as a double-digit seed. There's a decent chance that whoever that is going to be a team that you might not even be able to say what city they're from. You probably don't know their mascot. Not all double-digit seeds are created the same. If the Oregon Ducks, as an 11 seed, beat South Carolina as a 6 seed, that's not really a stunner. That's not what the tournament's about, an 11 seed beating a 6 seed. Even if New Mexico beats Clemson, again, an 11 seed beating a 6 seed, it doesn't feel like a stunner. They aren't the ones that make it go. It's those 13s and below. If somebody from that group pulls off the win, especially if it's like a 15 over a 2 or something, people still remember Maryland, Baltimore County for knocking off a number one seed in Virginia. They'll remember that for 10 years. That's what makes this tournament go. Go back and think hard about last year's Final Four, if you follow college basketball at all. Do you even remember who was in the Final Four? Do you? Do you remember who won? You probably do, but I wouldn't 100% count on it. They all kind of run together. Last year's Final Four was a little unusual because you had a couple of teams in Florida Atlantic and San Diego State that weren't really expected to be there. And in the end, UConn got the win, and they should have. They were the best team pretty clearly. But you had a couple of real mystery guests last year. I'm not sure people even remember that, even with the mystery guest. It's this first couple of days and the stunner, whoever it's going to be, or plural, it might be a bunch of teams. That's what makes this go. And next year, for the first time, when we get on the field in college football, maybe we get one. And I think that's going to make the sport a little better. I love the fact that we're finally going to get games played on campus. I wish we would have more. Sooner or later, I think the people involved in this thing are going to realize we're taking the best part of our product, that on-campus atmosphere, that special feeling that you get, and we're giving it away at too low a price. The bowls and the historic partnership that the bowls have had with college football have had their hooks in this thing forever. And so it's always been, from the very beginning, it's always been this idea of, well, we can't get rid of the bowls. We can't let down our partners from the bowls. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. If you can destroy the Pac-12 conference, then you know what? You can move on from some of the bowls. You could. If potentially now the ACC might go down in a next few years and cease to exist as we have historically known it, at least. If that can happen, I'm pretty sure we can live without the Cherubundi Bahamas Bowl or whatever it is this year. Pretty sure. So hopefully we'll get more games on campus and then just the championship game. You want to have the championship game somewhere in neutral field because you think you need it. Maybe even the semis. Okay, you could still sell me on that, that those games are too important to be determined with a home field advantage. You could sell me that. But the first couple of rounds, nah, man. On campus is better, and on campus is going to give us a better atmosphere when those first Cinderellas happen. So enjoy the games today. But again, we're here for you to talk college football, and very much looking forward to doing just that as we go. But just keep in the back of your mind, whenever that Cinderella moment hits over the next few days, pick it out. Who's it going to be? Who's going to be that first team that does this in the NCAA? On the college football level, who's going to be that team that we associate with? I don't think it'll be Boise State. You kind of look around, you say, in the American, is there a team? Because some of the American teams still feel kind of established. Is there a team that could do that? I feel like it's going to be Mountain West. Because West teams don't get as much attention to begin with just because of the nature of the beast, of where they're located, when their games kick off, if it's a night game, that kind of thing. I feel like it's going to be someone Boise-like. Boise can't do it. Boise's already too well known, regardless of whether Boise can find their groove again. Boise's already too well known. But maybe one day it's the UNLV Rebels or somebody like that. For a while there, Fresno State was kind of a fun team with Pat Hill back in the mid-2000s. Maybe it's them. Sooner or later it's coming, and I'm looking forward to it. All right, it is the Chuck Oliver Show again. Heath in for Chuck today. We will check in the next 20 minutes or so on where things stand with the ACC and Clemson. The ACC yesterday filing their lawsuit, responding to Clemson's lawsuit. We'll get into the latest on that coming up in just a bit, what the timetable looks like. If this thing is going to break up, what would that potentially wind up looking like? On the other side, though, I just got a couple of thoughts about Clemson, because I think sometimes you look in the mirror and you're still seeing the better version of yourself. You know, you're saying, the hairline looks pretty good. Hairline might not look that good. Yeah, I'm not that heavy. Maybe you're a little bulkier than you were. It's real easy to look at yourself and see the best version. Sometimes you need somebody who can reflect the truth at you, and I wonder whether Clemson's got that. We'll get into it coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Talk to Joe Ovius coming up in about 15 minutes. Joe, part of the Ovius and Giglio podcast. Those guys are based out of Raleigh and have been, again, together, the two of them, covering the ACC and particularly the goings-on in the Triangle, but really the ACC, for their entire careers. They've got as good a handle on what's happening as anybody, and so we'll talk to Joe about the reaction to Clemson deciding that they need to file a suit. Because, again, their suit is a little different than what FSU's trying to do. Yeah, FSU from the beginning has just been, we're gonna scream and we're going to shout and we're going to make threats and we're going to hold teleconferences that some people say some embarrassing things, frankly. Clemson's been more low-key, but some of what Clemson is arguing for is, frankly, not very logical. I mean, they're trying to say, well, if we leave the conference, why would our rights stay behind? Because that's what you agreed to. That's the whole point of the grant of rights. If the rights don't stay behind when you leave, then you haven't granted anything. Granting rights while you're in the conference, no kidding. Who else would have the rights to your games? That's not really what the grant of rights is about. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But I do wonder about Clemson, because FSU, for all their noise and all their bluster, FSU, I think, can at least fall back on the idea that they are a national brand. FSU, with all the success that they had over a sustained period of time, built the brand up, became something in the late 70s, didn't have consistency in the 80s until the later part of the 80s. But then you have those classic games between them and Miami. Then in 93, Bowden wins his first national championship. FSU remains a high-profile program throughout the entire decade of the 90s, multiple Heisman winners, on into playing in the title game in 2000. The later years of Bowden do not go very well, but Jimbo Fisher comes to the fore and wins another national title that shows it's not just a one-person thing, that you can have success post-Bowden at FSU. You also have someone win the Heisman and become a number one pick in Jameis Winston. FSU, over a much longer period of time, has built national attention. Some brands are national, some brands are regional. And there's nothing wrong with having a strong regional brand. But it's different from a national brand. And in the SEC, you've got some programs that are true national brands and some that are not as much of one. Georgia is an example of how over time you might be able to become one. Georgia was not a national brand 10 years ago. It was a really strong regional brand, but Georgia was not a program that people had grown up necessarily affiliating themselves with, that never had set foot in the state of Georgia. They hadn't had that kind of success. There are people that never been to Tallahassee in their lives that over all that winning, and oh, I'm a Deion Sanders fan. Primetime went to FSU. Hey, I'm an FSU fan. They've got that. They've built that up. Clemson won a national title early 80s, was always pretty good. Some years they were down. Tommy West years were a little lean, but pretty good for most of the ensuing run between that championship and the Dabo run. But before the Dabo run, they're okay. And now Clemson looks itself in the mirror and they see themselves as the very best. They see themselves as that two national title, number one pick at quarterback with Trevor Lawrence. We are right there with the best. If you were listening yesterday on the show, Phil Kornblut was on from the South Carolina Sports Network, and Phil was saying that that's how Clemson fans perceive themselves, that they say, hey, you know, we're a program like an Alabama, like an Ohio State. We should be paid that way. Are you, though? Are you? Or did you just have a unique run where, one, FSU fell off big time? FSU was in chaos for a few years, and Clemson took advantage of that fact. Two, you had a pair of elite quarterbacks for a combined run of 6 of 7 years. You had Deshaun Watson, 1 year of partial Kelly Bryant, and then Trevor Lawrence takes the wheel. It's hard to get that kind of guy on a regular basis. Even the best programs in the country do not consistently have that type of talent at quarterback. We sure that Clemson's going to do that? Because DJU was supposed to be that guy. Didn't work out that way. Well, then Kay Klubnik was going to be the guy. Yeah, we'll see. There's some talent there. But it sure doesn't look like he's a generational prospect. Well, maybe the next guy will be. Maybe. Or maybe, just maybe, Clemson had a really hot run, and now Clemson's back to what Clemson pretty much had been, other than that one uniquely hot run. A good, solid football program that will continue to land quality talent, but that is not a national program. They aren't. They were national champions, but being national champions doesn't inherently make you a national program. It takes longer than that. If Georgia tailed off right now, and there's no reason to think they will, but if Georgia tailed off right now and over the next 5 years only made the playoff one time and only won one SEC championship and every year was good enough to win, we'll say 9 games, but they weren't winning 12, would Georgia be a national program? I'm not sure they would. You're close. You're on the threshold of it, but you need to sustain it a little longer. You need to have the kid that grows up somewhere else in California or Arizona or Texas even and says, "Oh man, Georgia's so cool. I want to be like this guy that plays for Georgia. I want to be Brock Bowers." That's the kind of thing that takes some time. Clemson didn't sustain it long enough to be truly national. I think FSU, in the end, one way or the other, FSU would find a landing spot. Now, it might not be a landing spot on FSU's terms. FSU, I think, expects that they would get full dollar to join the Big Ten. Oregon and Washington didn't get full dollar. They got about 40% on the dollar. Would FSU get 40%, 50%? I don't know. I don't think right now the Big Ten wants FSU. I don't think FSU could get full dollar in that conference. But I think FSU for sure would find a landing spot. Clemson does not feel like a fit for the Big Ten culturally at all. And I don't think Clemson's brand is perceived to be the kind of national brand that I think Clemson imagines that it is. So again, maybe you could get somebody to just take you in. If a TV network wants them to, they probably will. But are you going to get the treatment you're looking for? That's the part that I'm not so sure Clemson's going to get. Because I don't think the Big Ten's lusting after Clemson. I sure don't think the SEC is, because the SEC doesn't need it. You've already got a team in the same state. You've got the whole area covered left and right with teams. What exactly does Clemson have that the SEC just can't live without? So why would they deal him in on a full share of the money? What would the point be of that? I mean, if you can figure it out, let me know. And again, it's not to say Clemson couldn't compete in the SEC, that Clemson can't be good. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying they think they're elite. You heard it yesterday here on the show. They think they're there with the best national programs. Ohio State has fans in every state of the country. All over. Go to any sports bar you want. Go to a sports bar in Portland, Maine. Go to a sports bar in Albuquerque. On a Saturday, you will find Buckeye fans there. Part of that's because Ohio people have moved all over the place, whereas South Carolina people have probably stayed home a little bit more. But you'll find them anywhere you go. And they've been an excellent program for decades, and they've sustained that excellence to the point that they were a national program. Clemson's not there yet. And I think that they believe they are. And so we'll see if they get what they want out of this ACC thing. And if what they want is to leave, I just think they might be in for a surprise on what's awaiting for them financially when they get to the other side of that wall. But going to be interesting to see what it looks like for sure. We'll talk about it, whether or not they can get there, with Joe Ovius from the Ovius and Giglio podcast coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on here on Thursday. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. We head to the Raleigh area now, and we're joined by Joe Ovius of the Ovius and Giglio podcast. They have been as steeped in the ACC, both of them, as anybody out there is. And so I want to reach out to Joe and find out kind of what he made of the latest developments this week with Clemson and the ACC now suing each other. Joe, how are you?
What's going on, Heath? You know, just another day in Tobacco Road paradise. We should be talking about basketball. Instead, we're wondering where North Carolina is going to end up in the next couple of years in terms of conference play.
Yeah, it's really odd timing. I thought it was interesting that this was the week they decided to file this thing. The thing that stood out to me the most, I'm sure to you too, was that Clemson didn't just like copy and paste FSU's lawsuit and basically say, yeah, us too. They're trying to push some different claims and some claims. I'm no attorney, so I have no idea if they found some loophole here, but some claims that at least on their face don't seem to make a lot of sense. The idea that you have a grant of rights, but the rights don't actually stay if you want to leave, on paper, that kind of doesn't seem to add up.
In terms of the timing, I will say this in terms of the timing. The lawsuit happened at the same time as ESPN announced their new college football playoff TV deal, right? And that TV deal essentially codifies that the ACC is a second-tier conference behind the Big Ten and the SEC. I think we can all agree to that. But when you agree to those financial terms, that revenue share payout, you are admitting, yeah, we're second tier. We're just hoping to be a part of this. We don't have actual equal footing with the Big Ten and the SEC. So Clemson and Florida State know this. They've just gone about this in different ways. To your point about how Clemson has attacked this differently, I still think it's just throwing stuff at the wall. Like, their biggest claim is, hey, we didn't take a vote on this for you guys to countersue Florida State, which, by the way, the ACC countersued Clemson this week, too. And it's like, my understanding is there are a lot of things that you don't need to take a vote for. You can be consulted, but ultimately, he's the commissioner. Jim Phillips is the commissioner, and you have given him powers to make moves that don't require a vote. And that includes things like certain television contract triggers with ESPN. And this all gets back to one main thing that nobody really wants to address. All these people voted for all of this. You voted for the grant of rights when Maryland left the conference. All this stuff about, oh, we can't pursue what's best for us. Right, guys? That was the point of the grant of rights, to lock you in so you could not do that. And then, oh, well, we don't like the Jim Phillips stewardship. You voted for him to be the commissioner, and now you have this buyer's remorse. So they've all it's basically just this stacking and compounding of mistakes that the ACC has made that is finally coming due, and Clemson and Florida State and quietly North Carolina are trying to find their way out.
Yeah, some people have tried to draw a comparison here between the way that Texas and Oklahoma handled things, because Texas has always been kind of the ones who publicly wave their guns around and make threats, and Oklahoma would sit back and come off as the quote-unquote more reasonable one, but the two of them still worked in concert with their interests the whole time. Clemson has been known quietly behind the scenes to be largely in alignment with FSU, but FSU's boosters and whatnot love to be public hotheads. To me, though, Joe, this is almost a little more like The Godfather, where, okay, so now they get to be Tatalia here. They get to be the ones that have the grudge, but UNC is Barzini, and they're the ones that are controlling this thing all along.
Maybe. I don't think anybody's controlling anything. I think everybody has their own interest in mind right now, and they're all just trying to see what the other one is doing so they don't have to look like the bad guy or take the brunt of it, right? To your point about Florida State, total agreement with you. That's how they've always been. John Swofford, when he was the commissioner of the ACC, he had to play the politics. He did a really good job of quieting them down every single time they had a problem with it. But Jim Phillips doesn't have that same political sway, I guess, or that political touch that John Swofford did, right? To your point about Texas and Texas A&M or these other conference realignments, the dates matter, okay? So Florida State and Clemson people will tell me, oh, well, we have a landing spot. And every time I ask, well, where are you going? If you're so sure that you have a landing spot, where is it? Well, we can't say, but we know we have a landing spot. I mean, you might. That's fine. But if you really had a landing spot, if you knew where you were going to go, this kind of stuff would have happened already. If the grant of rights was easily broken, it would have been broken by now. When you look at every single bit of realignment, it all lines up with television contracts. And I think the part that Florida State, to their credit, put on Front Street, much to the ACC's displeasure, much to ESPN's displeasure, is that they put out there something that none of us knew. And that was this opt-out that ESPN has in the television contract. The way it's always been reported all the way back to 2016 is that this deal for the ACC and ESPN and the grant of rights goes all the way through 2036. Little did we know is that it's that statement was all built on the assumption that the ESPN people would go ahead and pick up that option. there's no guarantee that they would do this. And I thought it was interesting that the college football playoff, which starts in 26-27, coincides with the ESPN opt-out, opt-in time between 26 and 27. And Ross Dellinger put in that Yahoo piece this week, when he was breaking down all the things that are going on with Clemson, that in the ESPN college football playoff deal, I think the quote was, they are expected to have a look-in in 2028. Now, Heath, why would you have a look-in for a contract literally a year after it started?
Yes, a world where everything constantly is shifting all the time.
Right, because you don't know how things are going to look, and ESPN knows that they don't know how it's going to look. Or maybe they're thinking, you know what, when we do this reassessment with the ACC, we might renegotiate with them. They might not like the terms of it, and then suddenly without a television contract, that's when things can get pretty wild, and that's when things can start to shift again. Because Texas and Oklahoma left as the deal with the Big 12 was starting to come to an end. That's why for years, with all this realignment talk, I've talked about 2030 as being the time frame where you could probably start to think about teams leaving, because the Big Ten contract starts to come up at that point, and you're about 5 years away from the ESPN ACC grant of rights wrapping up. It's all calculus. It's all math. And that's what every single one of these things are doing. It's a math problem to see what they can negotiate out and save money along the way.
Joe Ovius with us from the Ovius and Giulio podcast on the Dunkin' Donuts Newsmaker line here on the Chuck Oliver Show. One thing I think a lot of people don't understand, Joe, so I want to get your take on it. There's been differing reports on the UNC-NC State relationship. Obviously, NC State publicly flipped their choice to allow the three schools to be admitted from California and SMU. That was perceived as something UNC did not want. They never changed their vote on the subject. Yet there's also been some reporting that now the two of them, one can't leave basically without at least the other getting approval or something. So where in your mind do things stand? UNC is clearly perceived as the bigger brand, but where do things stand in terms of these schools and what they can do or not do?
Well, essentially, all of these university systems are political bodies. But the North Carolina university system is probably, if not, the most political of all of them in the United States. I don't have enough time to explain the tentacles of that board of trustees. But the bottom line here is that they had a change in their policy that essentially says that North Carolina or NC State, but mainly North Carolina, because that's the person, that's the school that everybody wants, they cannot unilaterally decide what to do, right? That essentially it needs approval from the board of trustees from the university system, meaning that North Carolina cannot just go out and join the SEC for the sake of this conversation, we'll say the SEC, without NC State being taken care of in some form or fashion. That could mean that they're a package deal, the same way that Virginia and Virginia Tech got caught up in a political mess during the ACC's round of conference expansion. Remember, Virginia Tech was not part of that initial run of ACC expansion. It was that body of politics to get them involved, right? So it could mean that UNC and NC State are tied together to one conference, or they have to facilitate it in a way that the SEC or that NC State will be fine with whatever happens with UNC. So let's say it's a matter of, oh, okay, well, State's going to be taken care of because they're going to go to the Big 12, or State's going to be taken care of because, who knows, maybe they end up in the Big 10. I don't know. I really don't know how it all plays out, but it just means that North Carolina cannot do something without NC State also benefiting in some form or fashion.
Yeah, because some people say, well, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, the word was that they were tied together and then they weren't. But this seems different. And from what you're saying,
it is different. It is different because of the change in how the Board of Trustees would approve anything North Carolina does.
Last couple of minutes here with Joe Ovius. Again, the Ovius and Giulio podcast. They talk about ACC stuff and more in the Triangle. You should check it out if you have not already, wherever you get your podcasts. So, Joe, let's be realistic here. When do you think you're pouring one out from the ACC? When are you coming to join us in Jerry World for the 6 day long SEC media week? When does that happen?
Man, I don't know if it's the podcast budget to go full 6 days, man. But it's I would say by 2028, this is a wrap. Gilio and I went to the ACC tournament in Washington, D.C., and he was jokingly calling it the last call for basketball. That the fact that it ended up being an NC State North Carolina championship with NC State finally winning an ACC tournament title for the first time since 1987, you couldn't have asked for a more poetic way to wrap up this iteration of ACC conference play. From here on out, with the additions of SMU, Cal, and Stanford, man, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. And clearly, we're headed in a direction where Florida State, Clemson, UNC, and all the ancillary players are going to end up somewhere else. It was a good run. You know, it was a good run. The ACC will still exist in name, but obviously it's not going to be the same thing that has people, you know, tied to the conference for how it's been for 60 years.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating for sure to see how these next few years play out. Joe Ovius, you can check him out against the Ovius and Gilio podcast online as well. Joe Ovius on Twitter. Joe, appreciate you making some time, man.
All right, man. Take it easy.
There you go. There's the perspective from right there in the heart of everything in ACC country. It's a shame that it looks like this is where the train is headed. And I still do wonder if there is some way to avert this. That's why FSU just being so determined to go scorched earth publicly, you just shake your head at that. Because in the end, especially if you are ESPN, you could make a case that you should do something along the lines of what Fox did, where Fox said, look, we will front the money for Oregon and for Washington. We're not going to fund full shares for them, but we'll front the money to where it's more valuable to them to get the stability of being in the Big Ten Conference than dealing with really, really unstable ground in the Pac-12. So even though you've got a bunch of schools in the Big Ten that don't want these teams in, they're saying, Look, the L.A. schools is one thing. We really do not want four Pac-12 schools and West Coast trips and all the expenses involved. You know, Rutgers versus Oregon in anything makes absolutely no sense to be a conference sport. We don't want this. Iowa's been probably the most vocal about it, but they're not the only ones. Places like Illinois are looking and saying, we have enough struggles as it is trying to compete and win at the highest level in this conference. What do we need two more schools from the West Coast with the kind of money that some of these schools can get, whether you're talking about Nike money for Oregon, you're talking about the money from up-and-coming businesses in Seattle with the internet and all the different stuff that's happening there. What do we need to deal with all this stuff for? Fox said, you won't lose a nickel. We'll write the money into the contract for them. We'll fund it. If you are ESPN and the ACC is a property you've got for 12 more years, unless you want out of that deal altogether, and maybe they do, wouldn't it make more sense to say, look, we'll throw FSU, Clemson, and UNC, we'll throw them all a bone. Because Miami doesn't have the leverage any of those schools have. NC State really doesn't have the leverage any of those schools have. Virginia is desirable because of their academics and the size of that TV market in that state. It's an up-and-coming state still. It's a growing state. Virginia is a desirable brand, but not in football. And this is, as we all know, about football. Virginia Tech, historically, not all that special either. In football the last few years, a little more success than Virginia. None of them have the kind of leverage that FSU does, that UNC does, and that Clemson, at the moment, is perceived to have. If you're them, maybe that makes more sense, and maybe that's how this is. I still hope the ACC pulls through. I don't like the idea of us being down to either one, three conferences, or two, just blowing everything up and going to a straight up 20 teams from the north, 20 teams from the south, with a few teams kind of included in the Western calculation for north and south. I don't want this to get there. It may, but I hope it doesn't. All right, it is the Chuck Oliver Show as we continue on. Quarterback development, it's a big part of the sport. The question is, why right now does college football seem to not be doing a very good job of developing quarterbacks for the NFL? How bad's it gotten? Maybe worse than you think. We'll explain coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
You know, he does things his way. He's not Brock. He doesn't try to be Brock. He's a quiet leader similar to Brock, but he's really physical. He's tough. He knows the work ethic it requires. I mean, the guy's taken a lot of reps since being here. He's been durable. He's doing a good job leading in that room, as well as Lucky is and the two young kids.
That, of course, the voice of Kirby Smart talking about Oscar Delp. Delp was such a highly touted tight end, and this is one of the challenges that everybody that's trying to catch up to programs like Georgia has. South Carolina had some family connections to Oscar Delp, did everything you could other than, like, sacrifice virgins to try and get him. Crowd chanted his name. Go back and look. The game that Oscar Delp visited South Carolina, the number of targets for the tight end in that game versus every other game all season, it was hilarious. You had an offensive coordinator in Marcus Satterfield who was frustrating lots of people by how little he was throwing to some talented tight ends. But the game that Delp visited, that day he remembered to throw to the tight end a whole bunch. It did everything they could to try and convince him, hey, come on over. You can be a star right away, be the lead, you know, one of the lead guys in the offense. And, yeah, I don't know. Kirby's got a pretty good case. Win rings. Be patient. I'll be a star at Georgia, too. When you have a guy that's willing to go be third or fourth on the depth chart at another SEC school for a couple of years, when you're saying you could be right to the head of the class, that's a tough thing to overcome. And Kirby Smart has built a machine strong enough in recruiting that most of the time it can convince kids to do that. Even in a transfer-happy era, convince kids to come there and be patient. A guy like Brock Vandegrift staying as long as he did at quarterback, that is not normal. A guy like Gunnar Stockton willing to be patient this long, not normal. Kirby Smart's got it going on, man. We will talk to Jed May coming up in the next hour of the program, and we'll talk about Delp and about some other things with Georgia as they continue to, compared to lots of other national programs right now, have a pretty mellow spring, pretty mellow offseason. You added some players, obviously, from the portal. You added some coaches, some changes on the staff. But still, even losing a guy like Adel McGee, who's a really good recruiter and an important part of what you'd built there, one of your last original staffers, you still feel pretty good about where things are over in Athens. You know, not a lot of major disruptions going on compared to certainly Alabama, Michigan, and other places like that. Ohio State, obviously, with some big changes. Speaking of Michigan, by the way, one quick news item. Their defensive line coach, Greg Scruggs, has apparently resigned his position. This was the coach that had been accused of driving while intoxicated over the last weekend, and now he is officially not going to stay on the staff. So Sherrone Moore, in the middle of spring practice, now has to go out and see if he can find himself another staff member. So I mentioned the quarterback situation. Look, we're a college football show, and in the end, what matters is whether or not you have success in college football. Not every great college quarterback is somebody that's going to fit the pros. That's been a storyline for years, and it will continue to be. However, I do think you can make a case that if college quarterbacks, star college quarterbacks, are getting drafted by the NFL and almost none of them are turning into starters, that there's an issue here. 2021-2022, there were 19 quarterbacks selected in the NFL draft. 19 in the span of 2 years. It's 2024, so we're talking about guys that have been in the league for 2 to 3 years. Do you know how many of those quarterbacks selected between the 2021 and 2022 drafts are expected to start in the NFL week one this year? The answer is 2. And one of them is Brock Purdy, who was literally the last player chosen in the draft in 2022. So out of the 18 quarterbacks who were not selected with the dead last pick in the draft as the ultimate flyer, basically, Trevor Lawrence, the overall number one pick, is the only guy who's expected to start. Now, not all of these guys are equal. A guy like Justin Fields has obviously started for multiple years in Chicago, and we'll see whether or not he can develop into something more over time in Pittsburgh, because obviously while Russell Wilson's the expected starter, Wilson's up there in age. Who knows? Fields might be a starter by the middle of the season there. Who could say? But I do think, even if you allow for the idea, hey, maybe the pandemic screwed some things up, maybe a guy like a Trey Lance, for example, only getting to play one game in the 2020 season,
and not get another full year of games for development. Maybe that explains part of it. Maybe some teams are just desperate for quarterbacks because there aren't enough of them, and so they're reaching. You can argue with some of those things. But still, for this sport, you need to be producing guys that have a better preparation level for the NFL than that. Part of what they're here for is to try and win games on the college level, but you're also trying to get them ready for the future. I was just really surprised that the numbers are that bad. It also explains why some teams would still rather grab a Russell Wilson or a Kirk Cousins or whoever, even if they're on the wrong side of 35, just because you've seen that they can do the job. And if the young guys coming to the league are struggling as bad as they are right now, well, it makes sense that you might want to lean on guys that you think can do the job. But for college, that needs to change. And not just like one guy like Caleb Williams to be a success. There's a bunch of quarterbacks coming in the league this year. They need to make it. They need to make it clear this was a weird anomaly, not the future.
Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation, like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.